everybody, I'm Justin Chisholm, welcoming you back to the Yacht Racing Podcast, where my guest this week is talented British dinghy sailor and well-known YouTube personality, Tom Morris. Aside from his sailing achievements that include a national championship victory in the RS800 twin trapeze skiff class and winning the UK's Champion of Champions Endeavour Trophy last year, Tom also hosts the highly popular Mozzie Sails YouTube channel, where he and some of his sailing friends provide some fascinating and much-needed analysis of the technical side of the 37th America's Cup. The channel's racked up close to 4 million views so far and has a subscriber base of just short of 22,000 and counting. To subscribe to the Mozzie Sails YouTube channel, go to youtube.com/@MozzieSails, or you can find the link in our show notes. Tom Morris, it's really nice to finally get to talk to you. I'm looking at you on the screen right now. The audience won't be able to see this, but it looks just as if I'm watching one of the Mozzie Sails videos. You have a nice setup there in your house.
Yeah, no, I do. I've got my little Mozzie Sails office upstairs. It's dual purpose, both my kind of full-time job and, got a little bit of a better camera for this cup cycle, better lens, better audio. So hopefully people can see the difference, but yeah, it's a nice little setup.
Well, it's working pretty well now. The microphone sounds great, which is a big plus when we're doing podcasting. Tom, I want to, before we get into anything about Mozzie Sails and anything about the America's Cup, I want to talk to you about yourself and your background. I know you're I'd describe you as a kind of very talented dinghy sailor in the UK, but are you a pro or are you a really useful amateur?
No, I'm certainly not a pro by any means. I'm just a semi-useful amateur. I have my moments. I actually tried really hard when I was younger, and we at university did a bit of 49er sailing, but found out reasonably quickly that didn't have quite what it took to be a professional. And actually, I also discovered after university, after having a bit of a break from sailing, that I far enjoyed being an amateur and approaching my sailing from an amateur point of view. It enabled me to kind of decompartmentalize it and just focus on doing the best I could with the time available. And, you know, as it ebbs and flows in life, I've got a lot more enjoyment out of it rather than stressing about doing better than I could actually achieve, trying to chase 49ers around. So now I'm just an amateur, but on my day I get decent results.
Well, decent results like the Endeavour Trophy. I know you won the Endeavour Trophy. British listeners will know that event very well. It's the Champion of Champions event in the UK. You've got to have won a national championship just to get there, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. You know, and I think this is exactly where my level's at. I am, you know, kind of on my day, I can compete with the pros in a boat that I'm familiar with on my own terms, on a, you know, a little shifty estuary that's very tidal. I can kind of, yeah, get a bit over on them then. But and, you know, and I did, and that was what happened at the Endeavour, really. I think we're the first amateurs to win it in about 8 years. Luke Patience, who kind of represented GB at, well, a few Olympics, 3 Olympics, I think, and medaled a silver medal in London. He's won it previously, and then before him, Ben Saxton, who's a North Sails now guy, but previously a NACRA Olympian and would have many championships. So it was nice to get one over on the pros this year at least and get our names on that trophy for sure.
Absolutely. And just, we should, I was a crew when I was sailing dinghies. I never got a mention. My brother always got mentioned as the helm. Let's talk about your crew. Who is that?
Yeah, so my crew's Guy Fillmore. He actually keeps quite a reasonably low profile. Complete polar opposite to me. So he's not one for the limelight, but he's an exceptional crew. He's actually the crew that I mentioned, the 49er sailing we attempted at university. He actually crewed for me then. We were were too light, underfunded, and kind of a little bit frustrated by performance there. And we both stepped away from the sport for several years. But when he moved a little bit closer to my home, I proposed the idea of going sailing again. And we've kind of righted a few of those wrongs from back in the day and had a bit more success later in life as amateurs. So it's a good story.
It's a good story. Where did that story begin for you with sailing? How old were you? What boat was it? Who introduced you?
So I'm not from a sailing family. We started actually, my dad is a bit of an explorer, a bit of an enthusiast, and he goes... dives passionately into different hobbies. And on a holiday down to Cornwall, he saw boat sailing and he just decided, oh, we'll rent a sailing dinghy. He went down to the quay, I think it was in Mylor or Foy, and basically said, can we hire a sailing boat? And of course they told him no. Well, they asked him if he knew how to sail, which he didn't. He thought it'd be easy. So the first thing we did when we got back from that holiday was went on a kind of a our way, learn to sail course. And I think initially it was for my dad and my sister to do, but my sister didn't particularly like the cold and wet, whereas I was a little bit game for it and got involved that way. But it was later on, I played a bit of football when I was younger. I was really into that, but actually had an injury from football just when this sailing started, and I could sail, but I couldn't really play football. So it gave me an outlet from that. And grew up sailing on little puddles in the northwest in the top when I was about 12, 13, 14.
What was your sailing club? That's my neck of the woods. So
Is it? Yeah. So my sailing club was Nantwich and Border Counties. Yeah. So it's a really great club. And I mean, we didn't know before we kind of came home and booked onto the courses, but it was literally 5 minutes from our house. So, you know, once I learnt to sail and eventually, I did a bit of racing in a mirror with my dad, but he's not competitive at all. He's very much a cruiser, and I got instantly frustrated. So my dad got a topper, probably not so much because I wanted it, but because he probably wanted me out of the boat. And yeah, I could just cycle down after school, push my topper off the lawn and into the water and go sailing. So it was a great way for me to get out often. And you know, really enjoyed it, and just played around on the boat a lot.
As a fellow northerner, you'll appreciate what I've always said is that the lakes, the small lakes and gravel pits of the north, they teach you how to sail properly. None of this easy peasy sailing in steady breezes on the sea that the south coast people always get up to. And I think we produce better sailors.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. And I think you know that is really important. And what you learn, which I don't think you do on the coast, is that kind of like urgency of adjusting the sails and the controls and constantly looking for the wind. And it's actually quite amusing to a lot of people because I'm now known in my own sailing for sailing skiffs and quite good at big open venues, national events, that sort of thing. So probably polar opposite from where I came from. But no, it's certainly a good grounding for my own sailing career.
So you moved up through what classes?
29ers. So I went toppers. I was never going to be big enough to go into lasers. I sailed a laser at my local club, but moved into 29ers, did a bit of crewing there for a couple of years. And we were fairly decent. One of the kind of top youth boats of our kind of generation, got a top 10 at 29er Worlds. And then progressed through to the 49ers, which I guess I was talking about before, where... The progression wasn't quite so easy.
that's where the curve started to level off a little bit. Yeah,
for sure. I mean, I think it's a great experience and it's a great eye opener, but also hugely frustrating. You know, you're very used to success in your sailing career up until then, and it's such a huge jump. And I think in retrospect, I was probably a little bit dismissive of the quality of amateur fleets and probably didn't look hard enough of getting some experience in just the UK adult amateur scene. I probably could have really done with doing a few more national championships. Again, I hadn't come from a sailing family, hadn't sailed lots of different boats. I'd very much focused on the youth boats. And then jumping into, you know, competing against professionals when I was a student, finance and time limited, it probably wasn't you know, looking back on it, an appropriate kind of level of competition for me. And I do regret now not, you know, taking it upon myself to get involved in a few kind of few amateur fleets, but you live and learn.
Yeah, you do indeed. Now, I may be guessing here and I may be completely wrong, but I feel like you're an engineer.
I am not an engineer. So I'm a marine scientist.
Wow.
So a lot of people ask this question. So Rob and Tom, so I guess you're asking this because of the Mozzie Sales content to put out.
Yeah, I'm easing us in towards the Mozzie Sales thing. Well, maybe let's do it this way around. Maybe let's introduce Mozzie Sales to people who don't know it. First of all, where did that name come from?
Well, Mozzie's my nickname. So I mentioned earlier, I played a bit of football when I was younger, and Tom is a very common name. So Mozzie was a bit of a nickname similar to my surname, Morris, and to stop the confusion on the football pitch. And then it just kind of stuck. It's kind of gone a little bit in and out of fashion, but pretty much everyone in sailing calls me Mozzie and knows me as Mozzie. And my YouTube channel was initially just kind of me posting videos, literally as it says, of me sailing. And yeah, obviously when the America's Cup stuff started, I didn't really think to change it. And now it's stuck. So I'm keeping it.
The channel's pretty successful. When did you start that channel? When did you just start posting videos from your own sailing?
I think 2012 initially. So me and my wife had an RS200 and I got a GoPro, and I was really keen actually when this was after taking a break from sailing for a while, and I was really keen to kind of put a big effort in to coach myself, and action cameras had just kind of got bigger. You could take them out, they were small and you could mount it. And I was like, actually, I'm going to really methodically look at my own sailing and kind of take pleasure, not in the results, but in terms of analyzing my own sailing and getting better. So it started then, and I just used to post up videos, review it a little bit, give my wife pointers so she could roll her eyes at me.
Yeah, always a good idea, giving your wife pointers. Yeah,
yeah, it's dangerous giving a crew pointers, let alone when they're your wife as well. So that's how it kind of started. And then stepped away from the sport again, did a bit of cycling, and came back again from the cycling. I was very analytical about it all. And when I came back to sell the 800 with Guy, you know, straight away I was like, we're going to get a load of cameras. I'm going to, like, you know, this isn't about the results we get. This is about us, you know, Guy doing some fun sailing and me doing what I like. And that's kind of like analyzing it and just seeing how I can get better. And that's where I really pull my enjoyment from now. And yeah, a lot less stressful than trying to mix it with professional 49ers. If you just kind of, you know, set yourself your own goals of improving your own performance and, you know, look for the details in that, and that's where Mozzie Sales came from. Those were the initial videos I was posting.
So you've gone from analysing yourself, self-coaching, to analysing the pros. I became aware of you in the last cup, in the last America's Cup, when you were posting great stuff, just really asking questions, trying to answer them yourselves, and not really purporting to be an expert, but just, you know, this is what we think. And I thought it was really useful. So when did it morph into that sort of thing? Was it always about the cup, or did you work on any other projects?
I think I worked on a little bit for the RS800 class. So we were trying to put out some more podcasty videos, and I did that with Rob Gullen and Tom Partington, who are kind of guests on the channel frequently. They're both engineers, they're both RS800 sailors. And yeah, we did a bit of chat for the 800s off the back of that, technical stuff, kind of help people. And then when the cup came around, it was really a perfect storm. It was kind of the second lockdown in the UK. It was the depth of the winter. We couldn't go out and do anything. And to be honest, a lot of the chat that was on that got onto Mozzie Sales was happening anyway, all the way through the Christmas cup. And we were just talking on WhatsApp. I was asking these guys questions, sharing my opinions. They were coming back, and it just rolled from there. And then we kind of watched the Christmas Cup, talk amongst ourselves. And there's a wider group of mates as well from the sailing club. We all kind of chipped in. And I was just kind of, got nothing else to do. I can make videos. And I also wanted to discuss it with a wider audience. I wanted to get other people's opinions on it. I wanted to say what I thought and, you know, share it on forums. It's a very easy way to like articulate something is just to put it in a video and share the idea and see what comes back. So it was kind of quite an organic development of not really doing it from the media perspective of reporting on anything, more of a kind of an enthusiastic kind of fan thing of sharing ideas and asking questions. So, and I think that, you know, struck a chord with the fans of the Cup.
It's, you make it sound very straightforward, but it's actually a bit of a risk you took, because it's the internet and, you know, you can have all of these followers, but a lot of them just want to tear you to pieces. Have you experienced any of that? Have you had to deal with that?
Not really. I mean, the other side of it is I kind of welcome it. So if people challenge what I'm saying, that's kind of the reason I'm putting, well, actually not kind of, it is the reason I'm putting out there. And I'm not putting out saying this is a fact. I'm putting ideas out there to elicit a response and get people talking and learn more myself. And there's a huge amount of knowledge. I mean, you have to sift through it a little bit, but there's a huge amount of knowledge that comes back in the comment section and on the forums. And I think people kind of see that. As long as you don't, you know, stand yourself up as like the one true voice, then, you know, it should be received on that level, I hope. And yeah.
You seem to have a very enthusiastic audience. I mean, on Sailing Anarchy, people are very keen on the channel. People are offering to donate. There's, you know, suggesting that you should, you know, make it a commercial venture, all of this great stuff. And that's a forum that, you know, they're not afraid to say what they think on there. So you've obviously hit the right note. Do you feel like there was a vacuum that you've kind of filled, that the America's Cup just wasn't delivering that to people?
I do think there was a bit of a vacuum. The flip side of it is I'm not sure it's a vacuum that the America's Cup, you know, whether that's the organising authority of the teams, can really fill themselves anyway. I mean, you look at a lot of other sports and a lot of them will have kind of like fan analysis online, which is, you know, the nice thing about it is how I just described, it's an opinion being put out there for discussion. It's not someone telling you something as fact or pushing a message. And it would be very hard for the America's Cup or for the teams to actually pitch anything at the level I'm doing. So, yeah, I think there was a bit of a vacuum there, but it wasn't, you know, I'm not in competition with or filling something that should have been done necessarily or is best done by the Cup or the mainstream broadcasters. So I think that has made it, you know, better received than it possibly would have been otherwise.
And I'm guessing you enjoy doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a labour of love. It takes a lot of time, and it's kind of surprising that the videos go out, I post them, and I try not to watch them back too much. But I watched them and was like, oh, this looks so amateurish. And it took so long to do. But hopefully that's some of the appeal and some of the character of it. If people can forgive my questionable editing. But yeah, it kind of is what it is.
Well, I think you rely on, I think that only works if the content is strong, and the content is clearly strong and hitting the right note. So as you were talking there, a thought came into my mind, and there's a lot of negative talk about the America's Cup from fans who, you know, they don't like the foiling idea. They don't like these highly sophisticated boats. They'd much rather it was the old days with 12 meters and J-class and all of that sort of stuff. I feel like what you're doing is making the sport a bit more understandable, perhaps to those people, and helping them get their heads around it, because I feel like they're only pining for those days because they don't really understand what's going on with this new generation of cup boats.
Yeah, I think there's certainly an element of that. And, you know, let's be frank, I understand the appeal of the slow racing boats. I think probably the first cups I watched was when I was sailing 29ers, in the old kind of IAC class. And, you know, it did have its appeal. And I do think that I still think that racing is good racing. And there was a real good focus on the characters involved, and it was possibly easier to pick up. But, you know, what I really feel about these high-tech boats is actually when you delve into it and when you take time to think about it, a lot more of it is relatable to your average sailor than you would first expect. I mean, the human stories of coordinating the crew is still the same. The human stories of coordinating a design team, people can relate to, probably not just from sailing, but from their work experiences, from life in general, you know, raising funds, competing against other teams, you know, exploiting or working within the rules. All these stories are still there with the cup, and, you know, the boat doesn't change them. And I think what we need to do is kind of merge what are, you know, a fantastic spectacle. No doubt these foiling monohulls, which even personally I was skeptical of, you know, we've got to merge that spectacle with the human interest stories and the design challenges and that kind of all that good stuff, which is still there, but just needs kind of pushing forward as well.
Yeah, and obviously one thing that's helped with that is the shared reconnaissance program that the Kiwis have introduced for this cup. I know you have access to all of that, as do I, and I think it's a really valuable element. You're probably doing the best job, I think, of using that information that I've seen. And just to blow your trumpet for you, I know that senior members within the teams are watching your videos too, because they tell me, you know, because they ask me, oh, do you know this guy? And I said, well, actually, I don't, but, you know, maybe we'll do a podcast with him soon. But people are genuinely watching, because it's valuable stuff. So that's just a little plug for you.
No, thanks. That's good to hear. And even in the last cup, there's a few guys on the Ineos crew I know through my own sailing, and they kind of sent me a message once, and there was a picture of them in the debrief room, and up on the screen behind was a Mozzie Sails video. And I was never sure if they would just do, if it was like a kind of an old sailing mate of me doing it for sending me the video for a bit of a laugh, or I think it was kind of part tongue in cheek, but part true. And I've had a few stories come back that people are watching it, but there's definitely, you know, the people involved in these teams are hugely enthusiastic about it, and they've got to be secretive. They can't give anything away. And probably the people who are most frustrated about the lack of story behind the technical development are the people on these teams. And even if I'm not right about everything, which I'm sure I'm not right about anything, just the fact that someone's enthusiastic enough and passionate enough about it to put it up there and try and tell the story, yeah, I think a lot of them can identify with that. So, but yeah, it's nice to get the feedback that people are watching and people do see value in it.
Absolutely. Has it made it easier and more practical for you to do what you're doing with these videos?
The recon is what I've got access to is excellent, and I also think it's quite authentic. So it's basically following the rules of what recon we're allowed to do in the last cup. So there's no drones, there's no speed guns. It's just a camera on a boat following. So there's a limit to what you can see, and there's a limit to what the recon teams can practically capture, and that is authentic to what was happening in the last cup. So I think that's a nice, and I actually think if you were any closer in, it would almost be too much, and that kind of aura of mystery would be spoiled. So I think it's, you know, what I'm getting is great, and the actual recon reports, daily spreadsheets of data is really good. I've got a couple of guys behind the scenes who have enabling me to pull that, and that'll come online and we can tell a bit of the stories about how the teams develop their members and stuff. So it's fantastic. And, you know, the interaction with the videos I'm putting out has been amazing since I came back. And I just think this is growing and this interest is happening now. We're less than, but when I started, we were 2 years out from the America's Cup, and we're getting, you know, 50,000 people watching a launch video talking about Ineos's boat. We're getting 80,000 people watching a video about, you know, a rules debate on a test boat, not even a boat that's going to be in the cup, but just a test boat. So, yeah, it's great. And I think it's really extending the appeal of the America's Cup. Like normally you'd get a few grainy photos for months, a bit of speculation, but it would really die off. And, you know, if all I can do is keep that interest simmering, kind of elicit conversations with people, and keep the enthusiasm bubbling along until we get to the cup and the mainstream media charges in with the TV stations and they do a far better job of it. And, you know, I'll be so happy that I've kind of, you know, carried the baton, so it were. But yeah, no, I think it's the recon is for me and hopefully for my audience enabling a big gap to be plugged.
Yeah. And the important thing to realize is that without this, the teams have no reason to do any media. They've no reason to give anything away. So I think that's one of the biggest parts of it, is that we've got all of this great media content, the stuff that you're using, the stuff that Richard Gladwell's using down in Sail World and so on. And, you know, Dave Reed over in Sail World in the States, it's really keeping the interest in the cup alive, or not keeping it alive, actually igniting it so much earlier than it would be normally. Let's go back to that question of whether you're an engineer or not. You're a marine scientist.
Yeah, I'm a marine scientist. So I've always been a little bit sciencey, and yeah, my undergraduate was marine environmental science. And now I work actually rather boring for probably a lot of the audience, not what they want to hear, but I work as a consents manager for offshore wind farms. So completely not what you would expect, but I've always been quite sciencey, like I was describing with my own sailing, quite analytical, and I benefit from quite a few friends who have done ship sciences, marine engineering degrees. So yeah, that's basically the link through.
All right, let's get into the cup itself, AC37. And maybe first we should actually just I should ask what your opinion was of AC36. Were there any surprises in that for you with regards to the teams?
Yeah, there were actually. I was surprised at how competitive Luna Rossa were, and I was surprised, I was impressed at how much they were able to improve their performance through the cup. And it's a lesson that's been learnt in the past about, you know, making sure that you have those iterations to come in and develop. So that was kind of a big take home message for me. I was skeptical about it. You know, I mentioned earlier, I was skeptical about the AC75 foiling format. For me, I thought we'd have a lot of races like the Christmas Cup. And when the Christmas Cup happened, I was kind of proved right to myself. but it did develop, and there was some really, really good racing, especially the round robins. Once we got out on the steadier wind courses, obviously, then it was a little bit harder. It's a real shame that Magic, you know, had their incident when they did, because I thought they probably had more to offer than what they were able to show, and that was a shame. But no, I thought it was a good cup. It was a really good introduction to the new class, and you know, probably didn't have the kind of headline twists and turns that we'd seen in San Francisco, but no, a worthy cup in my book.
All right, so let's talk about AC37. More teams this time around. Same boat, same but different. Upgraded, yeah. Modified, lightened.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Obviously, one of the areas they're looking at is the takeoff and producing probably more consistent racing in the lower wind strengths. So they've knocked a considerable chunk of weight off the boat and also made the foil span larger, which should help takeoff. That does, though, reduce righting moments. They've had to extend the foil arm, or actually they've extended the box that foils in slightly, so the foil kind of reaches further down into the water, giving it a bit more depth to account for its extra span, but also give it a little bit more righting moment. On balance, I think it's a little bit down on righting moment, but still should, due to the reduced weight and increased foil span, lift out the water a little bit sooner. So for me, that's good. And looking at the conditions we've now got, I think when they designed the rule, they didn't know it was going to be Barcelona, but now we do know it's going to be Barcelona. We know it's going to be October. That seems quite fortuitous that they've made those changes to the boat.
Yeah. Barcelona is a venue. You think it could be light winds in Barcelona?
Yeah. I think by the time the cup dates, you'd have to remind me of them, but I thought it was mid to late October. We're looking at weakening sea breezes. I mean, the teams are going to be sailing there. We're going to have the data, probably could go back on it as well. So, there might be a listener who's going to comment on this and say, actually, October's really windy in Barcelona. But from what we've seen so far and from the data I've seen, it's not going to be. But I think it should be good racing, though. A much more open venue, swells as well. And every time we talk about that, I think back to when Team New Zealand won the Cup in Bermuda, and instantly they talked about moving to a monohull, not specifically foiling, but a monohull. And I think one of the things that Grant Dalton did say is they were looking to have a boat which could sail more offshore and, inshore racing like we'd know it. So maybe Barcelona as a venue is a step in that direction and will force the technology in that direction. Who knows?
So the Swiss are back, the French are back. Both of those are significant. What's your view on the Swiss team? To me, they look quite slick, maybe not on the water, but the whole operation, I think, will be super professional.
Yeah, I mean, looking at them on the water, they aren't where the other teams are. But what you have to remind ourselves is we're looking now at this recon footage where we've got daily videos and photos from a brand new campaign getting to grips with an AC75. If we'd had that looking at the teams from the last cup where they were in AC36 at a similar time, I think we'd be horrified. So you're comparing a Lingi to, established teams, which is an unfair comparison. So I think they're looking pretty good for where they're starting from. Behind the scenes, they've got some really good, staff. Sailing team probably isn't the A-listers that we're accustomed to. And the nationality rule obviously is part of that. But, look, the fastest boat always wins. And, they've got 2 years to get that sailing team up to scratch and a favour with the boat. So I think it'll be difficult for them from where they come from on a first challenge. We all know how hard it is to win on a first challenge. But we also know that a team that did win on the first challenge was a Lingi with Russell back in the day. So, never say never.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything about their technology that's particularly struck you? Anything you want to pick out?
I think they've been fairly kind of cautious so far. There's nothing that they've put on the boat that I've been surprised to see. I think most of the changes they've made are the ones which we saw come out in the rule, which were flagged straight away. They've removed backstays straight away. They've moved to the boomless setup, which we saw in the last cup from Luna Rossa and Emirates Team New Zealand. So put a self-tacking jib on recently. We've not seen them sail with that yet. But again, these are all kind of like adaptations which we're expecting. Not seen Cyclaws come on, but we probably expect that. There is a limit, though, to what's ever going to happen on the legacy AC's 5 platforms. We're not going to see, well, we can't see anything new in terms of the main foils. We're not going to see anything. So we're not going to see anything radical there. And below deck, in terms of the systems, they could be doing some incredible stuff, but again, we're not going to see it. So it's a hard one to call. I think Alinghi, their main efforts will be going into the design work for the new boat, their new AC75. So yeah, excited to see that. And I'm also kind of excited to see how their sailing team get to grips with the AC40 and how they do in the in the World Series events we've got coming up, because I think that's going to be key for them, how they can progress those sailors. That's what I'm going to be really interested in.
Yeah, I think the other thing about Alinghi that I'm really aware of is just the passion in that team. You know, the Alinghi brand in Switzerland is huge, and if you're a young sailor, then you know you've got a t-shirt, you've got a hat, you've got a sticker on your boat. Everybody wants to sail for Alinghi, so I think that'll count for something. But I agree with your comments. Maybe not this time around, but never say never. The other team that is sailing an AC75 right now is the Americans, and as I see on your show, when you do the analysis of the number of hours the boats are spent, the Americans are they're putting the hours in, aren't they?
Yeah, and it was a hallmark of their last campaign. Actually, they were first boat on the water, racked up the most hours in New Zealand as well. I think they had the first mule out. Well, the first mule, which actually could do a lot of sailing. Ineos obviously had their test boat, but that was a bit of a proof of concept rather than a serious sailing machine. So yeah, it's very much a hallmark of the American Magic approach. And not only are they getting a lot of hours on the water, but they're doing it with a boat which is fully crewed up. So that also helps, because you've got double the amount of people who are switching in and out each day compared to a AC40 or an LEQ 12. So yeah, fantastic start to the campaign. They've just been so consistent and methodical. It's really hard to point to anything which... I mean, they haven't had any challenges or setbacks yet. That's the other thing. Pretty much every other team has had something. Even their capsize was fairly minor. They were back at it the next day. So yeah, it's looking really, really good for American Magic, I think.
We've seen Cyclaws on that boat. Do you think Cyclaws is just a no-brainer for the Cup this time?
Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. I actually... made this point before we saw the Kiwis cycling in Bermuda, when I saw the rules didn't prohibit cycling. So I was, at that time, I was dead into my cycling, and I just knew the power I could put out. And there's lots of toing and froing on forums, and even amongst my own mates when, you know, we saw them cycling when the boat launched in Bermuda. But I was just sure, and people saying, oh, crossing sides, we'll be able to get on and off quick enough. And I was like, no, like, it's just going to be better. And obviously additional benefits of being able to be relatively hands-free to, you know, help the boat out in other ways is a key part of that. So I think, yeah, Cyclaws all the way. I think there are some really interesting things about meshing a Cyclaw into a hydraulic system though, and how the body kind of puts out its power. I think grinding works because you're very much developed to throw and pull arms, whereas cycling, you're not. You're very much developed, you know, from a species that runs to be pushing through the soles of your feet, and that's it. You've not got as much power on the upstroke. Why that's significant is because the hydraulic systems won't have that much momentum. So when you cycle, you've got a lot of momentum. So you have the dead spots in your cycle stroke, which you can kind of coast through and just focus on putting the power out. So I'll be interested to see how the teams, solve that problem if they can put out the same power on a boat pushing hydraulic fluid as they can in the gym pushing an erg bike with a massive freewheel. So I wonder what they can do with the gearings and the offset of the gearings to make that better. And I think that's one of the other advantages American Magic got. They've got SRAM on board, who are a very reputable cycling brand. And they've got the cycles actually doing it, pushing that hydraulic fluid, getting a feel for how that works with the, you know, the firing of the muscles and, you know, exactly what gearing and the hydraulics that link it up behind the scenes. So, yeah, interesting for sure.
It is. And the cycling thing, I think, is really, it's obviously going to be key to the whole thing. And, you know, the British, of course, within the INEOS sports group, you've got the old Sky team, who are now the INEOS
Grenadiers. Yeah.
Grenadiers, there you go. I know they were on the island in Parma training, and the sailing cyclists were up there training with them. There's got to be some advantage to having that much expertise just about the training and the nutrition.
I think certainly there will be the training and the nutrition. I'd actually looked at it. So a few of the INEOS guys I follow on Strava, they live locally. It's like a, you know, fitness sharing app. And I was looking at the training regimes they're doing, and they're very familiar workouts for raising your kind of hour power and 20-minute power, just the intervals. You're doing lots of 8 minutes sets, repetitions. So I think they'll be dialed in that way. I wonder, INEOS, you know, they've obviously got this huge link to the cycling team, but let's not forget one of the areas that did work for INEOS in the last cup was their grinding setup. They were able to reduce the amount of grinders they had. They had the forward facing all on their own pedestal, so they could choose their own cadence, as it were, their own arm speed, and the kind of basically the clever working of their hydraulics, the efficiencies there. So part of them probably be pretty disappointed to see cycles, because it was one area where they had a step ahead. Flip side is they've got a link with a huge cycling team to help them prepare and help their grinders and rowers and team switch over to a new method of power input. So
I guess they're just changing shape.
just changing shape a little bit. I know a few of them have seen photos pop up on Facebook and whatever, and they're definitely looking a little bit trimmer than they were, but they'll still want to hold a little bit of weight. It's, you know, it's not like cycling, the kind of on-road sport, where being small always helps, whether it's reduced frontal area from having a smaller body or actually weighing less, so you can get up hills quicker. You know, they'll still want to carry a little bit of a bulk. Their only, you know, performance criteria will be the amount of watts they can put out to power those batteries. So they'll be big guys still.
They will. The Brits are one of two teams that have built an LEQ-12, a less or equal to 12-meter test boat. And theirs really is a test boat, more than they keep telling us, you know, don't look at this as any guidance on what our boat's going to look like for the cup. It's really there just to suck in data. And I know you've dug down into that boat quite deeply. Are you impressed by it or disappointed?
I'm impressed by the ideas behind it, and I'm impressed that INEOS have taken the bold move to step back and say, you know, they've clearly looked at the last cup and where their deficiencies were, and there was a misalignment between what their model said their performance should be and what they actually achieved. And it's brave of them to say, actually, no, we're not going to be testing foil iterations. We're not going to be testing maintail deck interaction like Lunarossa might be. We're going to be, you know, collecting the cleanest data we can. So I admire that. And I admire that kind of very focused and, approach, basically. The flip side of that is the execution of it, I think they would admit, has been difficult. and the actual delivery of a boat, you know, with this level of sensors is has been challenging. Also integrating a huge design team, many of which don't have much marine knowledge, must have been hugely challenging. And it's just, you know, you don't know. It'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall, but it's clearly caused them some issues. And at some point, it's great to have lots of, you know, people asking why, but in the end, you've got to have a boat out there which tells you what's faster, you know, and that getting a better model, getting better understanding, collecting more data will help with the whys, but you've got to get out there and do it to see what's better. So there is a balance to be struck, and I feel that INEOS are close to tipping over the wrong side of that balance. I think they need a good couple of months on the water to really really actually collect the data they set out to collect.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Then we've got the Italians with their LEQ-12, the camouflaged colour scheme. I ask people regularly whether they think that was to just confuse the recon cameras or whether it's just the Italian Prada flair. What's your thought?
When they announced the boat, I think, was it Max Serenus? He said something like, I can't remember, said unique or something along those lines, which I kind of thought was tongue-in-cheek, because there's a lot about that boat which I don't think is particularly unique and definitely looks like a homage to Emirates Team New Zealand. And I thought with that kind of, Max has got a good sense of humour, and I almost thought the paint job as well was probably hiding a shape which Emirates Team New Zealand know well was amusing. So I kind of thought it's just a little bit of artistic flair and probably a little bit of an in-joke as well. I don't think there's, having stared at a lot of images, I'm not sure there's actually that much that's being hidden behind the funky shapes.
Anything unusual on that boat that we should be aware of?
No, I think it's very clear what they've been doing. So I've been looking a lot at how the different teams have scaled their boats, and it's interesting actually. Luna Rossa, they put out a video themselves about the scaling of it and the difficulties and challenges of that. But their boat is a very very representative of an AC75, and it's, you know, looking at that deck layout interaction, the mainsail control systems that go along with that. And, you know, I think they'll be looking at ways to take what Emirates Team New Zealand beat them with and improve upon it, understand it and improve upon it. And I think that was the goal of this boat. It's not to be the fastest boat, but it's to be a scale test of what they saw was good in the last cup and learn more about that and improve it. So it's definitely ticking a box, and there's an obvious design pathway there. It'll be interesting to see as this year goes on if we see some more novel ideas break on that. Even the bits they've been playing around with, so they've been playing with the foil tips, look like they've started off with what was probably a reasonably classical Luna Rossa foil, where they had these kind of sharp end plates on the end of the foil on the tips, and they're moving towards a more flexure tip with the flap kind of moving into like a more kind of softer component which goes around the trailing edge that goes up. And that was something that Emirates Team New Zealand did. So even there, they're kind of they look like they're treading in the footprints of Emirates Team New Zealand.
Yeah. Well, you've brought them up. Emirates Team New Zealand, if you had to put a gun to most people's heads to pick a favourite for this cup, and I think it is hard to pick a favourite, but are they just too far ahead technologically and design wise?
Yeah, I mean, if you'd asked me in the summer, looking at everything they had on their plates, I'd have said they've overstretched, because they've got the wind-powered land speed record going on, you know, a team constructing that, and, you know, key members off trudging around Australia looking for a dry spot. And, you know, you've got them heavily involved in the AC40 design and writing the class rules for that, working with McConaughey's, and you know, there's a lot going on there, and they're supplying this out, and they're also commissioning that boat, which then puts them back in schedule on, you know, they're commissioning the one design, which stops them from testing new components for several months. So they're behind Luna Rossa there. They've got so much going on, but then they broke the nose off the front of the boat. And even then I was like, oh, you know, but in December, it's just all comes good for them, doesn't it? Every time, you know, the land speed record comes in, the front's back on the boat in a matter of weeks. Not only that, but they've got a second one for two boat training. The sailing team is exceptional. The breadth, depth of talent, it is very hard to look past them. I've not even mentioned the design team, which seem always to be a step ahead. So,
yeah
they're looking strong.
And they did write the rule as well, which helps, I guess.
And they did write the rule, which helps.
All right. So listen, just to start to round up this little chat of ours, what are the trends, maybe not trends, what are the technologies that we or you think are going to be important this time around? You mentioned a few things like boomless mainsails. I feel like that hydraulic system at the back of the sail is kind of come on leaps and bounds a little bit. But I don't want to give my opinion. You tell us, just pick out a couple of things you think it'd be worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, so I think the sail interaction with the deck is the key point, cleaning up the flow around there. Clearly the step ahead that Emirates Team New Zealand had in the last cup was lowering the deck, lowering the centre of effort in the sail. The penalty they suffered off that was they had control systems visible on the deck, you know, out there in the breeze. So there's work to be done there. I'm interested to see, and American Magic are looking like they're investigating this. Luna Rossa might as well with their setup. So that's certainly an area to be cleaned up. Whether it's a massive gain or not, I don't know, but it's certainly an area to be cleaned up aerodynamically. The foils are going to be the big ticket item again, and not just the main foils, but the rudders. The main foils, it'll be interesting to see how things change with the increased span. Last cup, they seemed to be struggling for the required lift at low speeds, which left them with needing wingtips to kind of trap in some of that flow and large flat movements. With these lighter boats and larger spans, we could see quite different foils, maybe not the pronounced wingtips of before, certainly not the cord lengths we saw before, and maybe not the range of flat movements we saw before. So that is going to be a big change in the foils. And, you know, whenever there's change, there's room to get competitive advantage. And I mentioned it with the cyclores as well. I think getting that power delivery correct and making sure that the team is well-trained and well-geared for pumping oil rather than moving something that's carrying momentum, that'll be key. But also, how do you use those team members? You know, what else can they do now that their legs are moving rather than their arms? I think those will be the key points for me in this next cup.
Sounds great. Is there a chance that somebody could come up with something in this cup that will just blow everybody else away? It doesn't happen very often in the cup, but it has happened in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I think the chance of that happening does diminish every time we see the return of a boat. And that is the tight rope that the America's Cup walks. You know, you either stagnate in an old rule and things become tired, or you have new rules and you have, you know, drastic, rapid progress. Where are we on that scale? We're only the second cup iteration. There were lots of things which were quite dramatic and visibly different between the teams last cup. I don't think we're quite going to see the differences of the drop decks and, you know, the huge differences in foils between Team New Zealand and the other boats. But second cup in on this rule, I think there still will be big differences. And there's things that I can't even comprehend which will come out the woodwork. And I just hope I can catch them when they happen.
Yeah. And of course, some of these things we're never going to see because the systems that are built into the boat that even the recon teams can't get their camera lenses into, because everybody will be doing it differently, won't they?
Yeah, for sure. And I think we have luckily got a lot of data from the last cup and how the boats were sailed, the telemetry data that which came off them. So that's interesting. And what we're going to see this cup, which we didn't see last time, is preliminary regattas in the AC40s. So you'll get to see the development of the tactics and the strategies far more than we got last cup. And then we're going to get an actual preliminary regatta in the AC75s as well. So we'll be able to pull off the telemetry from that, which hopefully they'll have the same system, and we can do direct comparisons of how they've progressed in their sailing styles. That's the beyond the recon, that's the next avenue for exploitation and analysis.
I can see you starting to drool over the prospect yeah. of all that already. That's fantastic enthusiasm. Tom, thanks for taking the time to talk to me. It's been really interesting, and I hope people listening enjoy it. I would encourage everybody to go to the YouTube channel Mozzie Sails and subscribe, because join the rest of us. But I'll just say for now, Tom, thanks for doing this. Maybe we'll do this again at some point nearer to the cup, and just have a catch up then. But for now, Tom Morris, thanks a million.
Thanks, Justin. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast. Many thanks to Tom Morris for taking the time out from producing the Mozzie Sails YouTube channel to speak to me. Thanks also to all of you for listening around the world. I'll be back soon with another great guest. And until then, I'll just say, sail fast, everyone.